still missing, Grandma said. And they haven't found his car, either. I hear he only had it for a day. It was brand new right out of the showroom.
I saw Anthony yesterday. He was driving a Corvette that looked new. Grandma got dishes from the cupboard.
Mabel Such says Anthony's spending money like water. She don't know where he's getting it from. She says he doesn't make all that much at the store. Michael Baroni came up the hard way, and he wasn't a man to give money away, not even to his sons.
I got silverware and napkins, and Grandma and I set the table. My mother brought the meatballs and sauce to the table and went back for the spaghetti. My father moved from his living room chair to his dining room chair and helped himself to the first meatball. The front door opened, and Albert Clown walked in.
Am I late? I didn't mean to be late. I had a client.
Everyone stopped what they were doing and looked at Clown. Clown didn't get a lot of clients. He's a lawyer, and his business has been slow to take off. Partly the problem is that he's a sweetie pie guy, and who wants a sweetie pie lawyer? And partly the problem is Clown's appearance. Clown looks like a soft, chubby, not entirely with the program 14-year-old boy.
What kind of client? Grandma asked.
Clown took his place at the table.
It was a woman from the laundromat next to my office. She was doing her whites, and she saw my sign and the light on in my office. She came over for advice.
Clown helped himself to spaghetti.
Her husband took off on her, and she didn't know what to do. Sounded like she didn't mind him leaving. It was that he took their car, and she was stuck with the payments. It was a brand new car, too.
I felt the skin prickle at the nape of my neck. When did this guy disappear?
A couple weeks ago.
Did this woman report her missing husband to the police? I asked Clown.
No, she said she knew he was going to leave her. I guess he was fooling around on the side. I felt sorry for her with the car payment and all, but boy, can you imagine being that dumb? Here she is, living with this guy, and all of a sudden, he just up and leaves her. And it turns out she has nothing but bills. They had two mortgages that she didn't even know about. The bank account was empty. What a dope.
My mother, father, and grandma and I all sucked in some air and slid our eyes to Valerie. This was exactly what happened to Valerie. This was like calling Valerie a dope.
You think this woman is a dope because her husband managed to swindle her out of everything?
Valerie asked Clown.
Well, yeah, I mean, duh. She was probably too lazy to keep track of things and got what she deserved.
Oh, boy, Grandma said.
Clown hadn't a clue what he just said.
What?
He searched the faces in the room. Something was wrong, and he'd missed it. He focused on Valerie, and you could see his mind working backward. And then it hit him.
Kaboom. You were different, he said to Valerie. I mean, you had a reason for being a dope. Well, not a dope, actually. I don't mean to say you were a dope. Okay, you might have been a little dopey. No, wait, I don't mean that either.
Great, Valerie said, flapping her arms. Now I'm dopey. I'm a big, fat dope.
You're not fat, Clown said. You're just chubby, like me.
Valerie went wild-eyed.
Chubby? I used to be perfect, and now look at me. I'm a wreck, and I look like a white whale in my stupid wedding gown.
She narrowed her eyes at Clown.
You think I'm dopey and lazy and chubby, and that I got what I deserve from my philandering husband?
No, I was under stress. I never think. You know I never think.
I never want to see you again. The wedding is off.
And Valerie gathered up her three kids, her diaper bag, her kids' backpacks, and the collapsible stroller. She went to the kitchen and took the chocolate cake, and she left. Clown turned to me.
What happened?
I looked over at him.
She took the cake.
I caught a ride home with Sally, and I was parked in front of my television when my doorbell rang at 9 o'clock. It was Lula, and she was dressed in black from head to toe, including a black ski mask.
Are you ready? Lula wanted to know.
Ready for what?
To get my cleaning. That Mama Macaroni got my favorite sweater, and you got to get your car anyway. How are you going to get over there to get your car if you don't go with me?
My car. Mental head slap. I'd forgotten about the car. 10 minutes later, we were idling across the street from Can Clean. Lula cut the engine and pulled her ski mask back over her head.
Time to rock and roll.
Oh, boy. We got out of the Firebird and crossed the street. We got to the store, and Lula tried the front door. Locked. Lula turned to me.
Go ahead and pick the lock.
I don't know how to pick a lock.
Hell, you were the big bounty hunter. How could you be the big bounty hunter without knowing how to pick a lock?
She ran across the street to the Firebird and came back with a tire iron.
Maybe we can pry the door open.
She put the tire iron to the door jamb, and a car drove by. The car slowed as it passed us, and then took off.
Maybe we should try the back door, Lula said.
We went around to the back, and Lula tried to wedge the tire iron under the bolt.
Don't fit. This door is sealed up tight.
Lula gave the door a whack with the tire iron, and the door swung open.
Will you look at this? Have we got some luck or what?
I don't like it. They always lock up and set the alarm.
They must have just forgot. It was a traumatic day.
I think we should leave. This doesn't feel right.
I'm not leaving without my sweater. Soon as we get inside, I'll switch on my mag light, and you can go work that gizmo that makes the clothes go around. And before you know it, we'll be out of here.
We both took two steps forward. The door closed behind us, and Lula hit the button on the mag light. We cautiously walked past the commercial washers and dryers. All the little hairs on my arm were standing at attention, and my heart was thumping in my chest.
We got the counter right in front of us, Lula said. You switch on the whirly clothes thing.
I reached for the switch, and every light in the store suddenly went on. It was as bright as day. And there was Mama Macaroni, perched on her chair, sighting us down the barrel of a gun, her mole hairs glinting under the fluorescent light.
Holy crap, Lula said.
Mama Macaroni held the gun in one hand and Lula's dry cleaning in the other.
I knew you'd be back. Your kind has no honor.
How about giving me my dry cleaning, Lula said.
You never get this sweater. I take this sweater to the grave with me.
Lula looked at me like she wouldn't mind arranging that to happen.
And you,
Mama Macaroni said to me,
you're never gonna see that car again. That's my car now. You leave it in my lot, and that make it mine.
She squinted down the barrel at me.
Give me the key.
I pulled the car key out of my pocket and gingerly handed it over to Mama.
I'm gonna leave now, Mama said, and you're gonna stay here.
She backed away from us, past the washers and dryers, to the rear door. She set the alarm and scuttled through the fire door. The door closed after her, and I could hear her throw the bolt. I went to the front of the store and stood behind the counter so I could look out the window. We'll wait until we see her drive away, and then we'll leave. We'll trip the alarm when we open the door, but we'll be long gone before the police get here. I heard the Saturn engine catch, and then there was an explosion that rocked the building. The explosion shattered the big front window and knocked Lula and me to our knees. I grabbed Lula and got her to her feet and pulled her to the front door. We were walking carefully, crunching over glass shards. The door had been blown, and Lula and I picked our way through the debris onto the sidewalk.
What the heck was that? Lula said. And why is there a tire in the middle of the sidewalk?
I looked at Lula, and Lula looked at me, and we knew why there was a tire in the middle of the sidewalk.
Car bomb, Lula said.
We ran to the parking lot and stopped short. The Saturn was a blackened skeleton of smoking twisted metal. Chunks of shredded fiberglass body, upholstered cushion, and odds and ends of car parts were scattered over the lot. Lula had her flashlight out, playing it across the disaster. She momentarily held the light on a segment of steering wheel. Part of a hand still gripped the wheel. A ragged shred of black cloth was attached to the hand.
Uh-oh, Lula said. It don't look good for my dry cleaning.
15 minutes later, the entire block was cordoned. Yellow police tape stretched everywhere, and fire trucks and emergency vehicles were angled between police cars, lights flashing. Morelli arrived shortly after the first blue and white. He got the story, and then he stuffed me into his SUV. 45 minutes later, he returned and slid behind the wheel. Did they find the rest of Mama Macaroni?
Most of her. They're still looking through the bushes. Mama Macaroni covered a lot of ground.
Morelli turned the key in the ignition.
That car bomb was meant for you.
I thought my life would get better if I stopped chasing after bad guys.
You've made some enemies.
It's Spiro, I told him. Morelli looked at me.
Spiro Steva? Constantine's kid? Do you know this for sure?
No. It's just a gut feeling. The notes sound like him. And he was friends with Anthony Baroni. And now Baroni's dad is missing, and people say Anthony is spending money he shouldn't have.
So you think something's going on with Anthony Baroni and Spiro Steva?
Maybe. And maybe Spiro's wacko and decided I ruined his life, and now he's gonna end mine. Morelli thought about it for a moment and shrugged.
It's not much, but it's as good as anything I've got. How did the other two disappearances fit in?
I don't know, but I think there might be one more. And I told him about Clown's client. And there's something else. Clown's client's husband disappeared in their brand new car. Michael Baroni also disappeared in a brand new car. Morelli slid a sideways look at me. Okay, so I know lots of people have new cars. Still, it's something they had in common.
Baroni, Gorman, and Lazar were the same age within 2 years, and they all own small businesses. Does Clown's client fit that profile?
I don't know. Morelli turned a corner, drove 2 blocks, and parked in front of his house.
You'd think someone would have seen Spiro if he was back. The Berg's not good at keeping a secret.
Maybe he's hiding. It was early morning, and I was sitting on the side of the bed watching Morelli get dressed. He was wearing black jeans, cool black shoes with a thick Vibram sole, and a long-sleeved blue button-down shirt. He looked like a movie star playing an Italian cop. He kissed the top of my head.
Will you be here when I come home tonight?
No, I'm working the 3-to-11 shift at Cluck in a Bucket.
You're kidding. You must need money real bad.
I followed him down the stairs and closed the door after him. I shuffled out to the kitchen, got a mug of coffee, and took it upstairs to Morelli's office. I sat at the desk, and I took a pen and a yellow legal pad from the top drawer. I had the morning free, and I was going to use it to do some sleuthing. Someone wanted me dead, and I didn't feel comfortable sitting around doing nothing, waiting for it to happen. First on my list was a call to Clown.
"She wouldn't let me in the house," he said. "I had to sleep here in the office. What should I do? I had this terrible nightmare last night. Valerie was floating over top of me in the wedding gown, except she was a whale, a big, huge whale, all dressed up in the white wedding gown. And then, all of a sudden, she dropped out of the sky, and I was squashed under her, and I couldn't breathe. Good thing I woke up, huh?"
"Good thing. I need to know your client's name," I told him. "The one with the missing husband?"
"Terry Runyon. Her husband's name is Jimmy Runyon."
"Do you know what kind of car he just bought?"
"Ford Taurus. He got it at that big dealership on Route 1.
"His age?"
"Late 50s.
"What about his job? Did he quit his job when he disappeared?"
"He didn't have a job. He used to work for some computer company, but he took early retirement. About Valerie..."
"I'll talk to Valerie for you." And I hung up. Valerie answered on the second ring.
"Yeah.
I just talked to Albert. He said he slept in his office."
"He said I was fat."
"He said you were chubby."
"Do you think I'm chubby?"
Val asked. "No, I think you're fat."
"Oh, God," Valerie wailed. "How did this happen? How did I get fat?"
"You ate everything, and you ate it with gravy."
"I did it for the baby."
"Well, something went wrong because only 7 pounds went to the baby, and you got the rest."
"I hate being fat."
"That doesn't mean you should hate Albert. He didn't make you fat."
"I know. I've been awful to him, and he's such an adorable Oogie Woogums."
The next call was to my cousin Linda at the DMV. "I need some information," I said to Linda. "Benny Gorman, Michael Baroni, Louis Lazar. I want to know if they got a new car in the last 3 months, and what kind." I could hear Linda type the names into her computer.
"Baroni bought a Honda Accord 2 weeks ago. Nothing on Gorman, and nothing's coming up on Lazar."
"Thanks. I appreciate it." I disconnected and took a moment to enjoy my coffee. I liked sitting in Morelli's office. It wasn't especially pretty, but it felt nice because it was filled with all the bits and pieces of Morelli's life. I didn't have an office in my apartment. And maybe that was a good thing, because I was afraid if I had an office, it might be empty. I didn't have a hobby. I didn't play sports. I had a family, but I never got around to framing pictures. I wasn't learning a foreign language or learning to play the cello or learning to be a gourmet cook. Well, hell, I thought. I could just pick one of those things. There's no reason why I can't be interesting and have an office filled with stuff. And I can play the goddamn cello. In fact, I could probably be a terrific cello player. I grabbed my bag and my jacket. I yelled goodbye to Bob as I was going out the door, and I set off on foot for my parents' house. I was going to borrow Uncle Sandor's Buick. Again. I had no other option. I needed a car. Grandma was at the door when I strolled down the street.
"It's Stephanie!"
Grandma yelled to my mother. Grandma loved when I blew up cars. Blowing up Mama Macaroni would be icing on the cake for Grandma. My mother didn't share Grandma's enthusiasm for death and disaster. Dollars to donuts, my mother was in the kitchen, ironing. Some people popped pills when things turned sour. Some hit the bottle. My mother ironed away life's frustrations. Grandma opened the door for me.
Marilyn Rugotch said Steve has got most of Mama Macaroni at the funeral parlor. She said there was still some parts missing, but she wouldn't say if they found the mole. Do you think there's any chance that they'll have an open casket at the viewing? Steve is pretty good at patching people up, and I sure would like to see what he'd do with that mole.
My mother made the sign of the cross.
I have a daughter who blows things up. Cars, trucks, funeral parlors, people.
That only happens once in a while, I said. I do lots of other things besides that. My mother and grandmother looked at me. They wanted to know what other things I did besides blowing up cars and trucks and funeral parlors and people. I searched my mind and came up with nothing.
I can play the cello, I said.
I don't know where it came from. It just flew out of my mouth. My mother and grandmother stood frozen in open-mouthed shock.
I had no idea, my mother said. Why didn't you tell us?
I was shy. It's one of those personal hobbies. Stephanie, 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 I said to myself. What are you doing? You don't even know what a cello looks like.
How long have you been taking lessons? Grandma wanted to know.
A while. I looked at my watch. Gee, I'd like to stay, but I have things to do. I was hoping I could borrow Uncle Sandor's Buick. Grandma took a set of keys out of a kitchen drawer.
Big Blue will be happy to see you. He doesn't get driven around too much.
Big Blue corners like a refrigerator on wheels. It guzzles gas. It's impossible to park. And it's powder blue.
I guess you need a big car like Blue so you can carry that cello around with you, Grandma said.
It's a perfect fit for the back seat, I told her. I took the keys and waved myself out of the house. I walked to the garage, opened the door, and there it was. Big Blue. I climbed aboard, rammed the key in, and cranked Blue over. The car came to life and vibrated under me. I took a deep breath, told myself I'd own a Lexus someday, and slowly backed out of the garage. At 3 o'clock, I was standing in front of Milton Mann at Cluck in a Bucket, receiving instructions.
We're going to start you off at the register. It's all computerized, so it's super simple. You just punch in the order, and the computer sends an order to the crew in the back and tells you how much to charge the customer. And when you give the customer their change, you say, "Thank you for visiting Cluck in a Bucket. Have a clucky day." You'll do a 2-hour shift at the register, and then we'll rotate you to the chicken fryer.
If it was in the cards that the bomber was going to succeed in killing me, I prayed that it happened before I got to the chicken fryer. A woman and her kid stepped up to the counter.
"Tell the chicken what you want," the woman said.
"It's not a chicken. It's a girl in a stupid chicken hat."
"Yes, but she can cluck like a chicken," the woman said. "Go ahead, cluck like a chicken for Emily."
I looked at the woman.
"Last time we were here, the chicken clucked," the woman said.
I looked down at Emily.
"Cluck."
"She's no good," Emily said. "The other chicken was way better. The other chicken flapped her arms."
I took a deep breath and did some chicken wing flapping. "Cluck, cluck, 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 cluck."
"I want French fries and a chocolate shake,"
Emily said. At 5 o'clock, I was marched back to the fryer.
"It's a no-brainer," Mann said. "It's all automated. When the green light goes on, you dump the chicken in."
Mann pulled a huge plastic tub of chicken parts out of the big commercial refrigerator.
"When you put the chicken into the oil, you push the start button, and the machine times the chicken. When the bell rings, you take the chicken out and set the basket in the drainer. Easy, right?"
It was about 200 degrees in front of the fryer. How do I know how much chicken to fry?
"You just keep frying. This is our busy time of day."
A half hour later, Eugene was yelling at me from the bagging table.
We need extra spicy. All you're doing is extra crispy.
At 7 o'clock, Man appeared at my side.
We're going to rotate you to the drive-through window until closing time.
My muscles ached from lifting the chicken baskets. My hair felt like it had been soaked in oil. My arms were covered with splatter burns. I followed Man to the drive-through window.
Welcome to Cluck in a Bucket, I said to the first car. I want a scrappy 2 orders of fries and a large kersh.
Man was standing behind me.
That's extra crispy chicken, 2 fries, and a large Coke.
He gave me a pat on the shoulder.
You'll get the hang of it after a couple cars. Anyway, all you have to do is ring them up, take their money, and give them their order. Fred isn't back filling the order.
And he left.
7:50, I said. Please drive up. What? 7:50.
The car pulled to the window. I took money from the driver, and I handed him the bag. He looked into the bag and shook his head.
There's only 1 fries in here.
Fred, I yelled into my mouthpiece, you shorted them a fries. Fred ran over with the fries.
Sorry, sir. Have a clucky day.
Fred had pasty white skin that was splotched with grease burns.
Cluck you, the guy said to Fred, and drove off.
Thank you, sir, Fred yelled after him. Go cluck yourself.
After a half hour, I was hoarse from yelling into the microphone.
7:20, please drive up.
An SUV pulled up to the window. I reached for the money, and I found myself staring into Spiro Stiva's glittering rat eyes. The lighting was bad, but I could see that his face had obviously been badly burned in the funeral home fire. I stood rooted to the spot, unable to move, unable to speak. His mouth had become a small slash in the scarred face. The mouth smiled at me, but the smile was tight and joyless. He handed me a 10. Fred gave me a bag, and I automatically passed it through to Spiro.
Keep the change, Spiro said.
And he tossed a medium-sized box wrapped in Scooby-Doo paper and tied with a red ribbon through the drive-through window, and he drove away. The box bounced off the small service counter and landed on the floor between Fred and me. Fred picked the box up and examined it.
There's a gift tag attached. It says, Time is ticking away. Hey, I think this thing is ticking.
I took the box and turned to throw it out the drive-through window. No good. Another car had already pulled up. I need to take this outside.
No way. There are a bazillion cars lined up.
Fred reached for the box.
Give it to me. I'll put it in the back room for you.
No, this might be a bomb. I want you to very quietly call the police while I take this outside.
Holy crap, that guy gave you a bomb?
Maybe.
Put it underwater. I saw a show on television, and they put the bomb underwater.
Fred ripped the box out of my hand and dumped it into the chicken fryer. The boiling oil bubbled up and spilled over the sides of the fryer. The oil slick carried to the grill. There was a sound like phoomf, and suddenly the grill was covered in blue flame. Fred's eyes went wide.
Fire!
He grabbed a supersized cup and scooped water from the rinse sink.
No! Get the chemical extinguisher!
Too late. Fred threw the water at the grill fire. A whoosh of steam rose in the air, and fire raced up the wall to the ceiling. I pushed Fred to the front of the store and went back to make sure no one was left in the kitchen area. Flames were running down the walls and along the counters, and the overhead sprinkler system was shooting foam. When I was sure the prep area was empty, I left through a side door. Customers and employees stood in the parking lot, gawking at the spectacle. Fire trucks and cop cars roared into the parking lot. The crowd of spectators was growing. 2 men walked toward me, away from the pack. The silhouettes were familiar, Morelli and Ranger. They were both smiling when they reached me. I'd like to think it was because they were happy to see me alive, but probably it was because I was my usual wreck. I was grease-stained and smoke-smudged. Globs of pink foam hung from my chicken hat and clung to my shirt. Morelli took a quarter from his pocket and flipped it into the air.
Call it, he said to Ranger. Heads.
Morelli caught the quarter and slapped it over.
Heads, you win. I guess I have to clean her up.
Good luck, Ranger said, and he left. I was too exhausted to get totally irate, but I managed to muster some half-assed outrage. I glared at Morelli.
I don't believe you tossed for me.
Cupcake, you should be happy. He would have put you through the car wash at the corner of Hamilton and Market.
He took my hand and tugged me forward.
Let's go home.
I woke up thinking Morelli was licking me, but it turned out to be Bob. My face was wet with Bob's Slurpees, and he was gnawing on my hair. I made a sound that was halfway between laughing and crying, and Morelli opened an eye and batted Bob away.
It's not his fault, Morelli said. You smell like fried chicken.
Great. I rolled out of bed and shuffled into the bathroom. I soaped myself in the shower until there was no more hot water. I got out and sniffed at my arm. Fried chicken. I returned to the bedroom and checked out the bed. Empty. I followed the coffee smell to the kitchen. Morelli was at the table reading the paper. I poured out a mug of coffee and sat across from Morelli. Any word on the fire?
Yeah, Cluck in a Bucket is closed indefinitely, so you don't have to go back to work there. And they were able to retrieve the gift box from the chicken fryer.
And?
It was a clock. No evidence that it was a bomb.
Is that for sure?
That's what the lab guy said. I also got a report back on the car bomb. It was detonated from an outside source.
What does that mean?
It means it didn't go off when Mama Macaroni stepped on the gas or turned the key in the ignition. Someone pushed the button on Mama Macaroni when they saw her get into the car. We'll assume it was Spiro, since he gave you the box. Hard to believe he'd mistake Mama Macaroni for you, so I have to think he blew her away for giggles.
Morelli took a sip of coffee.
Anyway, it looks like he isn't trying to kill you. Yet.
Morelli's cell phone rang. He answered the phone and passed it over to me.
Your mother.
I've been calling and calling you, my mother said. Why don't you answer your cell phone?
My phone was in my bag, and my bag was in Cluck in a Bucket when it burned down.
Oh, my God, it's true. People have been calling night and day, and I thought they were joking. Since when do you work at Cluck in a Bucket?
Actually, I don't work there anymore.
4 days to your sister's wedding, and you're burning down the burg. You have to stop exploding things and burning things. I need help. Someone has to pick up the decorations for the cars and the flowers for the church.
Albert is in charge of the flowers.
Have you seen Albert lately? Albert is drinking. Albert is locked away in his office having conversations with Walter Cronkite.
I'll talk to him.
No. No talking. It's better he's drunk. If he gets sober, he might back out.
My grandmother was yelling in the background.
I gotta go to a viewing tonight. Steve is laying out Mama Mac. I need a ride.
Are you insane? My mother said to my grandmother. The place will be filled with macaronis. They'll tear you to pieces.
Morelli parked the SUV in front of my parents' house and looked over at me.
Don't get any ideas about your powers of persuasion. I'm only doing this for the meatloaf.
And later you're gonna play detective with me.
Maybe.
You promised.
The promise doesn't count. We were in bed. I would have promised anything.
Spiro's going to make an appearance at Mama Macaroni's viewing one way or another. I know it. He's going to have to see his handiwork. He's going to want to be part of the process.
He won't see any of his handiwork tonight. The lid will be nailed down. I know Steve is good, but trust me. All the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put Mama Macaroni together again.
Morelli and I got out of the SUV and watched a car creep down the street toward us. It was a blue Honda Civic. It was Clown's car. Clown hit the curb and eased one tire over before coming to a complete stop. Snockered, I said to Morelli.
I should arrest him,
Morelli said. You can't arrest him. He's Valerie's cuddle umpkins. Morelli opened the door for Clown, and Clown fell out of the car.
You shouldn't be driving, Morelli said.
I know, Clown said. I tried walking, but I was too drunk.
Clown started to sink to the ground, and Morelli grabbed him by the back of his coat.
What do you want me to do with him?
Morelli asked. Bring him inside. We'll put him to bed and let him sleep it off. Morelli carted Clown into the house and up the stairs, with Grandma trotting behind.
Put him in the third bedroom, Grandma said to Morelli, and then let's get to the table. Dinner's almost ready, and I don't want to get a late start on the meatloaf. I gotta get to the viewing.
Over my dead body,
my mother yelled from the bottom of the stairs. My father was already at the table. He had his fork in his hand, and he was watching the kitchen door as if the food would come marching out to him without my mother's help. My mother brought the meatloaf and green beans to the table. Grandma brought the red cabbage and a bowl of mashed potatoes.
I had a good idea today, Grandma said. I thought it would be special if we could have Stephanie play the cello at Valerie's wedding. Myra Sklar had a guitar player at her wedding, and it worked out real good.
My mother's face brightened. That's a wonderful idea. Morelli turned to me.
You play the cello?
You bet she does, Grandma said. She's good, too.
Morelli was smiling. He knew I didn't play the cello.
I think you should do it. You wouldn't want all those years of cello lessons to go to waste, would you?
I shot him a warning look. You are so toast. Morelli and I were parked on Hamilton across from the funeral home.
Tell me again why we're doing this, Morelli said.
The bad guy always returns to the scene of the crime. Everybody knows that.
This isn't the scene of the crime.
It's close enough. Spiro seems like the kind of guy who would hate to be left out. I think he'd want to watch the spectacle.
Someone rapped on the driver's side window, and we both flinched. Morelli rolled the window down a crack, and Grandma squinted in at us.
I thought I recognized the car, Grandma said.
What are you doing here? I asked Grandma. I thought it was settled that you'd stay away.
I know your mother means well, but sometimes she can be a real pain in the patoot. This viewing will be the talk of the town, so I sneaked out when your mother went to the bathroom. I was lucky to be able to hitch a ride with Mabel from next door.
You really shouldn't go to the viewing, Morelli said to Grandma. Why don't you get in the car and we'll go to a bar and get wasted?
Not a bad offer, but no can do. I can't take a chance on them having the lid up.
There's no chance they'll have the lid up, Morelli said. I saw them collecting the pieces, and they're not going to fit together.
Grandma slid her dentures around in her mouth while she weighed her choices.
Don't seem right not to pay my respects.
I'll go in and scope things out, Morelli said. If the lid is up, I'll come get you. If the lid is down, I'll drive you home.
I guess that sounds reasonable, Grandma said. I'll wait here.
Morelli got out, and Grandma took his place behind the wheel. We watched Morelli walk into the funeral home.
I guess you're unemployed again, Grandma said. You have any ideas where you'll go next?
I hear they're hiring at the sanitary products plant.
That might work out. That plant is way down Route 1, and they might not have heard about you yet.
An SUV slid by us, going in the opposite direction, and Spiro was behind the wheel. I started climbing over the console.
Get out of the car! I need to follow that SUV!
No way, Grandma said. I'm not missing out on this. I can catch him.
I opened my mouth to say no, but Grandma already had the car in gear. She wheeled Morelli's SUV into traffic, stopped short, laid on the horn, and cut into the stream of oncoming cars. Grandma learned to drive a couple years ago. She immediately racked up points for speeding and lost her license. She wasn't all that good a driver back then, and she wasn't any better now. I tightened my seatbelt and started making deals with God. I'll be a better person, I told God. Just don't let Grandma kill us both. Grandma smashed her foot to the floor and rocketed across two lanes of traffic. I had my feet braced against the dash and my eyes closed.
I got him in my sights, Grandma said, hunched over the wheel.
Spiro turned right and Grandma raced to the corner and took it on two wheels. One block ahead of us, we saw Spiro turn right again. Grandma stuck with him, and two turns later, we found ourselves back on Hamilton, heading for the funeral home. Spiro was going to make another pass.
This is convenient, Grandma said. We can see if Joseph is waiting for us.
Not good, I said. He won't be happy to see you behind the wheel. He's a cop, remember? He arrests people who drive without a license.
He can't arrest me. I'm an old lady. I got rights.
We sailed past the funeral home, past Morelli standing at the side of the road, hands on hips. He gave his head a small shake as we whizzed by.
I know I should have stopped to find out about the viewing, Grandma said, but I hate to lose this guy. I don't know why I'm following him, but I can't seem to quit.
Spiro drove three blocks and did another loop, taking himself back down Hamilton. Grandma got on Spiro's bumper just as he came up to the funeral home. Spiro flashed his right turn signal, and after that, it was all horror and panic and life in slow motion because Spiro jumped the curb and plowed into a group of men on the sidewalk. He hit two men I'd never seen before, and Morelli. One of the men was knocked aside, one was pitched off the hood, and Morelli spiraled off the right front fender of Spiro's SUV and was thrown to the ground. I was out of the car running to Morelli before Grandma had come to a complete stop. He was on his back, his eyes open, his face white.
"Are you okay?"
I asked, dropping to my knees.
"Do I look okay?"
"No. You look like you've just been run over by an SUV.
Last time this happened, I got to look up your skirt," he said.
And then he passed out. Morelli was on the couch with his foot propped up on a pillow on the coffee table. His leg had been broken in two places, but aside from that, he was fine. He had the television remote, a bowl of popcorn, his cell phone, a six-pack of soda, crutches, a week's supply of pills for pain, a box of dog biscuits, and a gun, all within reach. Bob was sprawled on the floor in front of the television. "Is there anything else before I go?" I asked him.
"Do you have to go?"
"Yes. I promised my mother I'd get the decorations for the cars. We have no food in the house, and I need to stop at the personal products plant and get a job application."
"I think you should stay home and play with me. I'll let you write dirty suggestions on my cast."
"Appealing, but no. Your mother and your grandmother are going to show up. They're going to need to see for themselves that you're okay, and if I'm here, they're going to grill us about getting married. Better to take the coward's way out and run errands. Plus, I wanted to drop in at the funeral home and talk to Konstantin Stiva about his son."
"What if I fall and I can't get up?"
"Nice try, but I've got it covered. I've got a babysitter for you." There was a sharp rap on the front door, and Lula barged in.
"Here I am, ready to babysit your ass."
The first stop on my list was a party store on Route 33 in Hamilton Township. "I'm here to pick up the car decorations for the plum wedding," I said to the girl at the counter.
"We have them right here, ready to go."
I lugged the six boxes out to the car and drove them to my parents' house. My mother was at the stove stirring a pot of vanilla pudding.
"I hope Joseph is feeling better. That was a terrible thing last night."
"He's going to be okay."
I looked over at Grandma Mazur. "He said to tell you the lid was down, and rumor has it Mama Mac went to the hereafter without the mole. Morelli said the medical examiner thinks the mole is still in the parking lot somewhere, but there might not be a lot left of it due to all the foot traffic around the scene."
"I get a chill just thinking about it," Grandma said. "Someone could be walking around with Mama Mac's mole on the bottom of their shoe."
From the corner of my eye, I saw my mother take a bottle out of a cupboard, pour two fingers of whiskey into a juice glass, and knock it back. Guess the ironing wasn't doing it for her anymore.
"Gotta go," I said. "If you need me, I'll be staying with Morelli. He needs help getting around."
"The organist at the church would like to know if you want her to accompany you when you play the cello," Grandma said.
I smacked my forehead with the heel of my hand. "With all the excitement, I forgot to tell you. I don't have a cello anymore. I gave it away. It was taking up too much space in my closet."
"But you loved your cello," Grandma said.
I tried to plaster an appropriate expression of remorse on my face. "That's the way it goes. A girl has to have priorities." I snatched a couple cookies off the plate on the kitchen table and ran through the house to the car. I headed down Route 1 to the personal products plant. I parked in a visitor slot, ran in, and got a job application from the personnel office. I had no illusions of getting an office job here. I had no references and few skills. I'd be lucky if I could get a job on the line. I'd bring the application back tomorrow and wait for a phone call for an interview. I slid to a stop in front of Giovicini's Market. I ran through the store gathering together some basic foods: bread, cheese, tasty cakes, peanut butter, cereal, milk, tasty cakes, eggs, frozen pizza, tasty cakes. I checked out and muscled my way through the door with bags in my arms. Ranger was leaning against the Buick, waiting for me. He took the bags and put them in the car.
"Looks like you're playing house."
"More like nurse. Morelli needs some help."
"Is that your job application on the front seat?"
"Yep."
"Personal products plant?"
"It's halfway to New Brunswick. I'm hoping they won't have heard about me. That's Grandma's line, but it's true."
"Babe,"
Ranger said. He was smiling, but there was a quality to his voice that told me it wasn't actually funny.
"I have an office position open. Are you interested in working for Rangeman?"
"Oh, great. A pity position."
"If I gave you a pity position, it wouldn't be in the office."
"I didn't think you hired women," I said to him. "The only woman you have working for you is your housekeeper."
"I hire people who have the skills I need. Right now I could use someone in the building who can do phone work and paperwork.
9 to 5, 5 days a week. You should consider it. The garage is secure. You wouldn't have to worry about getting blown up when you leave at the end of the day.
Ranger owns a small 7-story office building in downtown Trenton. The building is unspectacular on the outside. The interior is high-tech and slick, equipped with a state-of-the-art control center, offices, a gym, studio apartments for some of Ranger's crew, plus an apartment for Ranger on the top floor. The job offer was tempting. My car would be safe. I'd be safe. I'd be able to pay my rent, and the chances of rolling in garbage were slim. Okay, I'll take the job.
Use the intercom at the gate when you come in tomorrow. Dress in black. You'll be working on the 5th floor.
And he was gone. I looked at my watch. Almost 5. Perfect. Steva would be between afternoon and evening viewings. I drove the short distance up Hamilton and parked on the street. I found Steva in his office just off the large entrance foyer.
Stephanie, always nice to see you.
I appreciated the greeting, but I knew it was a big fat lie. Steva was the consummate undertaker. He never alienated a future customer. The ugly truth is, Steva would rather shove a sharp stick in his eye than see Grandma or me alive on his doorstep. Dead would be something else.
I hope this visit isn't due to bad news, Steva said.
I wanted to talk to you about Spiro. Have you seen him since the fire?
No. Why do you ask?
He was driving the car that ran over Morelli. Steva went as still as stone, and his pale vanilla custard cheeks flushed pink.
Are you serious?
Unfortunately, yes. I'm sorry.
How does he look?
Steva asked. I felt my heart constrict at his response. He was a concerned parent, anxious to hear word of his missing son. What on earth could I say? I only saw him briefly, I said. He seemed healthy, maybe some scars on his face from the fire.
He must have been driving by and lost control of his car, Steva said. At least I know he's alive. Thank you for coming in to tell me.
I thought you'd want to know. I'd set the alarm for 7 a.m. I didn't have to be at work until 9, but I had to shower and do the hair and makeup thing, walk and feed Bob, get Morelli set for the day, and make a fast trip back to my apartment in search of black clothes. And I needed to get Rex. He didn't require a lot of care, but I didn't like to leave him alone for more than a couple days. Morelli threw an arm over me when the alarm went off.
Did you set it for 6?
No, I set it for get up.
We don't have to get up early this morning.
I rolled out of bed. You don't have to get up early. I have a job.
I hate to ask. Your jobs have been getting progressively worse. I can't imagine who would hire you after the Cluck in a Bucket fiasco. Is it the personal products plant?
It's Ranger.
That makes sense, Morelli said. I should have guessed. I can hardly wait to hear your job description.
I'm doing phone work from the office, nothing in the field, and I get to park in the rangeman garage so my car will be secure. Is this where you start yelling? Morelli released me.
Hard to believe, but I'm actually relieved. I was afraid you were going to be out there trying to find Spiro today. Go figure this.
You love me, I said to Morelli.
Yeah, I love you.
He looked at me expectantly.
And?
I like you too. Shit.
Jesus,
Morelli said. I parked in my lot and ran upstairs to change my clothes. I unlocked my apartment door, rushed inside, and almost stepped on a small gift-wrapped box. Same wrapping paper Spiro had used for the clock. Same little ribbon bow. I stared down at the box for a full minute without breathing. Then I blew out a sigh and gingerly picked the box up. It wasn't heavy. It wasn't ticking. I shook it. It didn't rattle. I carefully unwrapped the box. I lifted the lid and looked inside. It was Mama Mac's mole. I dropped the box and ran into the bathroom and threw up. I drove the mole to Morelli's house and handed it over.
This is disgusting,
Morelli said, opening the box, checking the mole out. Yeah, you'd better call Grandma and let her come over to have a look before you turn it in. Grandma will never forgive you if you don't let her see the mole. I drove to Rangeman, parked in the underground garage, and took the elevator to the 5th floor.
I already knew most of the guys who worked for Ranger. No one looked surprised to see me when I came onto the floor of the control room. Everyone was dressed in black. Ranger had been slouched in a chair watching a monitor when I stepped out of the elevator. He came to my side and walked me station to station.
As you can see, there are two banks of monitors. Hal's watching the cameras in the building and listening to police scanners. He also watches the GPS screen that tracks rangeman vehicles. Woody and Vince are monitoring private security systems. I'm going to give you the cubby on the far side of the room. It's the area we set aside for investigation. Silvio has been doing this job, but he's transferring to the Miami office on Monday. He'll sit with you today and make sure you know how to get into these search programs. Initially, I want you to concentrate on Benny Gorman. We've already run him through the system. Silvio will give you the file. I want you to read the file and then start over. Tank will issue you a key fob similar to mine. It'll get you into the building.
He guided me into the cubby.
Tank will also outfit you with a gun. I expect you to carry it, and I expect it to be loaded. We have a practice range in the basement. Once a week, I expect you to visit the practice range.
I snapped him a salute. Aye, aye, sir.
Don't let the rest of the men see you being a smartass, Ranger said. They're not allowed.
I'm allowed? Ranger almost smiled.
I have no illusions over my ability to control you. Just try to keep the power play private so you don't undermine my authority with my men.
You're assuming we'll have private time?
It would be nice.
The almost smile turned into a for sure smile.
Are you flirting with me?
I don't think so. Did it feel like flirting? Of course I was flirting with him. I was a horrible person. Morelli was home with a broken leg and a mutant mole, and I was flirting with Ranger. God, I was such a slut. I sat in my chair and swiveled around. If I leaned back, I could see out of the cubby into the control room. The computer was different from the one I had at home. I hadn't a clue how to work the darn thing. Ditto the multi-line phone. Maybe I shouldn't throw the personal products plant application away. 5 minutes after Ranger left, Tank came into my cubicle with a small box. He set the box on my desk and removed the contents. Key fob for the garage in Ranger's apartment, Sig Sauer 9 with extra mag, stun gun, cell phone, laminated photo ID on a neck chain identifying me as a Rangeman employee.
Ranger, it's practice time reserved for you tomorrow at 10 a.m. You're required to carry the gun, the phone, and the ID with you at all times.
Silvio arrived with a cup of coffee, and Tank disappeared.
I brought you cream, no sugar, he said, setting the coffee on the desk in front of me.
He pulled a chair next to mine.
Okay, let's see what you know about computers.
Oh, boy. By noon, I had the phone figured out, and I could navigate the net. I was already familiar with most of the search programs used by Rangeman. I'd used them from time to time on Connie's computer. Beyond the standard search programs that Connie used, Rangeman had a few extra that were frighteningly invasive. Just for the heck of it, I typed my name in on one of the super searchers and blanched at what appeared on my screen. I had no secrets. The file stopped just short of a webcam view of my last gyne exam. Silvio went off to clean out his locker, so I was now officially Ms. Computer Whiz. I called my mom on my new cell phone and gave her the number. I could hear my grandmother yelling in the background.
Is that Stephanie? Tell her the macaroni funeral is tomorrow morning and I need a ride.
You're not going to the funeral, my mother said to Grandma Mazur. Joseph let you see the mole before he gave it over to the police. You're going to have to be satisfied with that. My mother's attention swung back to me. If you take her to that funeral, there's no more pineapple upside-down cake for the rest of your life. I disconnected from my mother and paged through the Gorman file. Then I did as Ranger suggested and ran Gorman through all the searches again. I called Morelli to make sure he was okay and to tell him I might be late. There was a stretch of silence while he wrestled with trust, and then he put in a request for a six-pack of Bud and two chili dogs.
And by the way, Morelli said, the lab guy called and told me the mole was made out of mortician's putty.
Don't tell Grandma, I said. It'll ruin everything for her. I printed the Gorman search, and then I searched Louis Lazar. Both men yielded volumes of information, date of birth, medical history, history of employment, military history, credit history. Neither man attended college. Personal history included photos, wives, kids, assorted relatives. I printed Lazar and moved to Michael Baroni. I just started a credit check on Baroni when my cell rang.
I'm hungry, Morelli said. It's 7 o'clock. When are you coming home?
Sorry, I lost track of the time.
Bob is standing by the door.
Okay, I'll be right there. I crossed town and stopped at Mike the Greek's deli for hot dogs and beer. 5 minutes later, I was at Morelli's. Morelli was still on the couch with his foot on the coffee table. The room was trashed around him. I doled out the hot dogs. 2 to Morelli, 2 to Bob, 2 to me. Morelli and I got a bud. Bob got a bowl of water. I kicked through the clutter, brushed potato chip crumbs off a chair, and sat down. You need to clean up.
I can't clean up. I'm supposed to stay off my leg.
You weren't worrying about your leg last night.
That was different. That was an emergency. And anyway, I wasn't on my leg. I was on my back.
Morelli leaned back into the couch and smiled at me.
And before I forget, your cello is in the front hall.
My cello? I ran to the hall and gaped at the big bulbous black case leaning against the wall. I dragged the case into the living room and opened it. There was a large violin sort of thing in it. I supposed it was a cello. How did this get here?
Your mother rented it for you. She said you gave yours away, and she knew how much you were looking forward to playing at Valerie's wedding.
I guess the panic showed on my face because Morelli stopped smiling.
Maybe you should fill me in on your musical accomplishments, Morelli said.
I plunked down on the couch beside him. I don't have any musical accomplishments. I don't have any accomplishments of any kind. I'm stupid and boring. I don't have any hobbies. I don't play sports. I don't travel to interesting places. I don't even have a good job.
That doesn't make you stupid and boring, Morelli said.
Well, I feel stupid and boring, and I wanted to feel interesting, and somehow someone told my mother and grandmother that I played the cello. I guess it was me. Only it was like some foreign entity took possession of my body. I heard the words coming out of my mouth, but I'm sure they originated in some other brain.
And you can't play the cello.
I'm not even sure this is a cello. Morelli went back to smiling.
And you think you're boring? No way, Cupcake.
What about the stupid part? Morelli threw his arm around me.
Sometimes
that's a tough call. I was a half hour early, and for the first time in a long time, I was excited to get to work. I wanted to finish the Baroni search, and then I wanted to move on to Jimmy Runyon. I was still working when Ranger appeared in my cubby entrance.
We have a date, Ranger said. You're scheduled for 10 o'clock practice downstairs.
Here's the thing about guns. I hate them. I don't even like them when they're not loaded. Actually, I need to leave the building for a while.
Looking for another job?
No, this is personal. A half hour later, I was idling across the street from Steva's. The hearse and the flower cars were in place at the side entrance. 3 black town cars lined up behind the flower cars. I sat and watched the casket come out. Macaronis followed. The cars slowly moved out and drove the short distance to the church. I saw no sign of Spiro. I followed at a distance and parked half a block from the church. I had a clear view of the parking lot and the front of the church. I settled back to wait. The parking lot was full, and the surrounding streets were bumper-to-bumper cars. The entire burg had turned out. An hour later, the doors to the church opened, and people began to file out. I caught a glimpse of the casket being rolled out a side door to the waiting hearse. Engines cawed up and down the street. I was intently watching the crowd at the church and jumped when Ranger rapped on my side window.
Have you seen Spiro?
No.
I'm right behind you. Lock up and we'll take my car.
Ranger was driving a black Porsche Cayenne. I slid onto the passenger seat and buckled up. How did you find me?
Woody picked you up on the screen, realized you were following the funeral, and told me.
I don't suppose there's any way I can get you to stop tracking me.
You don't want me to stop tracking you, babe. I'm keeping you safe.
He was right. And I was sufficiently freaked out by Spiro to tolerate the intrusion.
This isn't personal leave time, Ranger said. This is work. You should have run it by me. We had to scramble to coordinate this.
Sorry, it was a last-minute decision. The hearse pulled into the street, and the procession followed. Ranger waited for the last car to go by before he fell into line. There'd been no sign of Spiro, but then I hadn't expected him to show up at church, shaking hands and chatting. I'd expected him to do another drive-by, or maybe hang in a shadow somewhere. Or maybe he'd be hidden at some distance waiting for the graveside ceremony, using binoculars to see the results of his insanity.
"Thanks already at the cemetery," Ranger said. "He's watching the perimeter."
It was a slow drive to Mama Mac's final resting place. Ranger wasn't famous for making small talk, so it was also a quiet drive. We parked and got out of the Cayenne. We'd been the last to arrive, and that meant we had the longest walk. By the time we made it to the gravesite, the principals were seated and the large crowd had closed around.